When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
We came in this morning, all the people from all the Chicago series, like Chicago Fire, the
Chicago Med, Chicago PD, Chicago Med, Fire, yeah.
Chicago PD. I think they're all involved in this thing. And
it's very
during the break, Mr. David is like so pumped up about it. I am surprised you didn't run out to be an extra.
This is professional work.
And I'm looking for Hank Voigt around these hallways.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, is Voigt right by you? All right, will you find him, tell him, and then this is our guy?
He struck again.
I would love for our show to somehow be incorporated into a Chicago PD episode.
We were looking at media targets, not extended family members.
Which means he's escalating and twice as dangerous.
I would love to, like, just challenge one of the officers to a Chicago trivia moment.
Let's see what the doctor says about that.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Reunited, and it feels so good, Mr. David. How are you?
Morning, Mully. Yes, happy Thursday. Nice opening there, Brandon.
Yeah.
Back into the Chicago PD, Chicago Met, Chicago Fire state of mind.
Yeah, and I feel like I sound like a jerk there saying I want to challenge one of these guys to a trivia exam. The way I feel about it is I know a lot of police officers, you know, grew up with people who are on the force, et cetera. Got a great friend on the police force. And I just think that if you're, you know, the things that cops know, someone wrote a book about it. You definitely know where to go, where not to go, what to do, what not to do. And I would love to find out if any of the actors on those series are even aware
I doubt
of
it.
Anything.
I really
Chicago.
Doubt it. The focus is on the drama, not the details.
Yeah.
And speaking of drama.
Yes, sir.
Little drama last night, White Sox style. Would you say it's dramatic, the move? Finally, because we were waiting for this one. Garrett Crochet finally traded. We say finally, and it could have gone longer. It could have dragged out.
Yes.
It could have gone over the winter through the holidays. Good for Chris Getz that he took the deal, built up a market, and I think the Red Sox were willing to make a deal, and the White Sox getting four prospects in return for Garrett Crochet, pretty good haul.
Yeah, you know, it's. I'll explain it to you this way. No matter what deal he got, no matter what he did, I was never going to be over the moon about getting rid of a good young player who kind of proved himself a year ago. We thought, listen, you know, we don't know what Garrett Crochet will become, but his upside is pretty high, frankly. And so it's you know, now the Sox are in such a situation that they set a modern record for losses, even with him on that roster. So you got to take that into account. You got to understand two more years of control. Even if you were to extend him, what are you giving him? 3 years after that, tops? Are you going to pay the kind of money it would cost? I'm saying I still have to work out my sense of almost historical repetition.
I'm glad you started
the
déjà
vu.
There because
so
I'm glad you started there because I do think that this is a day where you're going to hear a lot of conversation about what the Sox got and how to project those prospects and how you look at and judge what Garrett Crochet is going to be versus what these prospects are going to be. But I do think that there's a difference between what we're asked to do in terms of evaluating the trade and celebrating the trade.
Right.
I do not think that if I were a White Sox fan, that I would necessarily feel like celebrating. Because
You're kind of admitting you don't like the Sox.
No, I mean, I'm not.
That's how I took it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm trying to be objective about the Sox. You know,
no,
I always
try.
You are
objective.
But I think that this is not something that I would look at worthy of celebration. What you just acknowledged yesterday, last night, was baseball economics got the best of you.
Yeah.
You had to deal Garrett Crochet now rather than wait because you couldn't afford to keep him.
Yes.
And so you are now acknowledging where you are, which is at the very rock bottom organizationally, and you are trading Garrett Crochet because of that. Because an organization that really wanted to commit to winning would likely build around Garrett Crochet rather than use him for prospects to build around those guys.
And in fairness, when I evaluate the deal, they got four prospects. They got four of the top 15 players from the Red Sox. They, you know, the Red Sox have like Teal, the guy that was kind of the deal maker here, is a catcher, and he is a guy that is their fourth best prospect. They got a couple of like surefire guys ahead of him that they were never going to move, and I understand that. But you know, you also look at it and you say, okay, they got two hitting prospects that now fit in their minor league system that were not there before. They don't really have people like that in their minor league system, and they got two guys like that. They got a third guy who might be able to play for them this year, an infielder.
Chase Madroff.
Who looks like a pretty good player, and then they got a pitcher with some interest to him. This is a hell of a lot better than what you managed in the Chris Sale deal those many years ago.
Eight years, almost to the day.
And yet, you can't help but feel that prospects are exactly that, prospects, and you gave more of a surety than you received back. Now, again, I think they got a pretty good haul from everything I've been reading. We'll talk to Jim Callis early in the program. Jim knows all these guys, has seen all these guys. He'll give us a better feel for it. I'm just being honest about, you know, I was never going to say, wow, they did it, great job. But they had a good winter's meeting, right? You finalized, you got Tauchman in here. the Palatine Pounder is a professional baseball player, and you got him on a fairly reasonable deal.
A pittance.
That's a, yeah, that's
$2.9 million.
That's a, it's next or to what's nothing. That, it was even one. That, was it 1.9? Yeah, 1.95, I believe, to be technical. So you gave a couple that's million
Juan
dollars
Soto
away.
Pocket change.
It's pocket change. You find that in the couch. But I think that when you think about the team they have, they added to it. They got the first pick of the Rule 5 draft. I don't know a lot about
Shane Smith, Shane right-hander Smith. From the Brewers organization.
He's from the Brewers. I'm just saying, they got more players coming out of that thing than they had going.
When you look at apples to apples, if you want to compare this 8 years later to the Chris Sale trade, because it is the Red Sox, because the prospects coming in return, Michael Kopech and Yoan Moncada, at that time, we were talking about a quality prospects, two of the top in baseball coming to the White Sox. That to me was more of a quality versus quantity. This time you get four guys, three of them might be ready to contribute sooner rather than later, and you've got a very fascinating prospect, first round draft pick in Braden Montgomery, who has yet to play an inning of professional baseball. You've got quantity here in terms of talent, and I think Chris Getz has to feel very good about the way, number one, he held on to Garrett Crochet at the deadline because of this possibility over the offseason to get more in return. And number two, I think that you feel like you were looking to replenish your system with positional talent, not just pitching talent.
And the Sox now have they had four, now they have six of the top 60 prospects in baseball. Now the Cubs blow everyone away, although the Cubs don't have six of the top 60, but they have eight
of the top 100.
Of the top 100.
Use them now, but we'll get to that in a moment. You know, the way that the Sox built a market or waited for the market to build with Garrett Crochet, I think, is interesting because it made you feel like they had five teams legitimately interested.
Yes.
And you heard them rumored, and Chuck Garfine is in at the winter meetings, and he said, and he's as close to Getz as anybody, that was – legitimate. They had five teams willing to make a deal. And when you have a market, you can ask for more and you can ask for whatever you need to. You're not negotiating against yourself. And I think this looks like, on paper, according to industry people who evaluate this stuff, a pretty good trade for the White Sox.
And as we talked about in the pregame, you know, it does look good and it does look like a good trade. You know, here's the problem is Jake Berger was also traded yesterday. And you got a hell of a lot more. You got three prospects for him when the Sox got a pitcher, a 26-year-old pitcher, who's like the Jake Eater is now like sixth or seventh on their list of left-handers.
That's Sox left-handers. Math that doesn't add up.
Yeah.
That's not the kind of Sox math you like.
Now, the people,
Jake Berger. Yeah,
the people who did that were all fired.
That got them fired.
That got them
trading
fired.
Jake Berger got these guys fired.
Yeah.
That was the deal that was the camel that broke the camel's back.
Right. Because you had two guys working in different,
with different agendas. And that's past history. But the Jake Berger trade is fascinating because he did go to the Marlins for Jake Eater, and then the Marlins use him for a season. He has a pretty good offensive year.
Yes.
Trade him to the Rangers for three prospects.
Yeah, I gotta ask Jim how good those prospects are. I got a feeling that three of them are better than Jake Eater.
Can I tell you what gave me a little pause in wanting to evaluate this closer with the deal with the Red Sox? Is that they are dealing with Craig Breslow. Now, you remember Craig Breslow from the Cubs. This is somebody who was a very smart executive, very keen pitching eye for talent.
Yeah.
And I think that when you look at his willingness to give up what they gave up for a 25-year-old ace in Garrett Crochet, they've already dubbed him that. But you do worry White Sox perspective. You always worried if he was a ticking time bomb, and the next time he took the mound, what injury might happen or occur. And I wonder about the health issue when you're talking about his long-term projection. You don't want to think that way.
It's legitimate concern. Here's the other thing, David. You know, when you talk about the timing, the fact that the Soto deal gets done for the amount of money it cost, and it exceeds the Ohtani deal, and you just thought that was never. You thought that one might last 10 years because of the uniqueness of the player. So that one is erased. And then the Yankees are like sailors on shore leave, and they got money in their pocket, and they're like, "Well, we may as well get Max Fried."
8 years for a left-handed pitcher who's 30.
8 years.
$218 million guaranteed.
That, by the way, is a ton of money, the most ever for a left-hander.
No,
and then
about
you
that.
And then you sit there and you say, "Well, there's a power left-hander available." I mean, how good is this?
That's
guy?
A great way to connect the dots, because it's almost as if indirectly Juan Soto going to the Mets triggered the White Sox deal with the Red Sox.
Isn't that strange?
Because the Yankees had to strike. And the way the Yankees responded to that was adding a left-handed pitcher. Well, look at the Red Sox in the same division. We can't let the Yankees do that. We need to strike ourselves. They think big. They aim high. They give up four prospects to the White Sox for Garrett Crochet, who is going to be their opening day starter.
And like I said, they kept their top three prospects, right?
Yeah.
So you got to keep that in mind. They gave up a lot, but they didn't give up the crown jewels, right? So, when you build up a good system, when you have a lot, you can make a lot of moves.
Right.
And I just hope that we feel good about this one. Eventually.
I think that eventually this, who knows, because how it will age. Here's what will age well, I think. Because of the way it's perceived, the reputation for Chris Getz has been enhanced already. And I think that he needed that.
Oh, he did
needs
after the
this.
Trade deadline.
The credibility deficit that he was facing heading into this offseason was real. And I think this helps close the gap a little bit. It's not, he's got other moves to make, and there's a lot of other evaluations to make. But at least when you're talking about your most valuable asset, he comes out of this, I think, viewed as this is a pretty shrewd move, a pretty good one for the White Sox, given where they are in their development.
Yeah, I think it's hard to evaluate right now. They made the move. I think you got to live with it. I also believe that, he came out and he kind of talked about the idea that that they've accelerated the rebuild. Now, I'm not even sure that we knew the rebuild. They had admitted.
I wish he wouldn't have said that.
The rebuild was coming.
If I'm being honest.
He accelerated the rebuild.
I wish he wouldn't have said that. I'm glad that he did, because it gives us a lot of things to talk about and certainly puts him on the record.
Totally puts him on the record.
But I wish he wouldn't have said that if I were him. Because what you do now is that you don't even want – you're not even at the point organizationally where you want to think about a timetable, where you want to get out a calendar, where you want to look at a clock, because it's ticking. And you don't want to start that clock.
I was thinking last night as I was putting some questions in for our pick six, I was thinking like, well, I got too much Sox here. And then I thought, is this the only day of the year we're really going to talk Sox? How awful was that thought? That went through my head.
They still got Luis Robert Jr. to trade.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about it again.
The next
next best player.
By the way, speaking of things to talk about, imagine being in a market where this would be the second biggest story, but that's the reality in Boston today.
Yeah.
This is the second biggest story in Boston. The Red Sox make a big trade, but the Boston market is talking about Bill Belichick back in coaching.
So it's a really fantastic topic, and we've got to get to it as well. It should be a ton of fun talking about it. It makes not an ounce of sense, and yet it makes a ton of sense depending on how you kind of view it. It's just one of those stories that it's extraordinary to see that happen, because Bill, you could argue, is as good a coach as there's ever been in the history of the sport.
They would argue that in Boston.
Yeah, they certainly would.
And they would have a good basis to argue that.
And the idea.
This is remarkable.
He's also, and I know this is going to go, this will go over flat, and there'll be a lot of people in the text line with a lot of jokes, but he is also a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He is a teacher of the game. And I just think that the game has changed so much on the college stage. And we'll talk about that a little bit. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, because there's no denying the fact that we're going to see a third consecutive Heisman Trophy winner who is a transfer. And NIL and the portal have changed pretty much everything there is about college football. So even if your great pitch is, look, I'm going to run a professional program. You're going to come here. You're going to learn everything you need to know in the NFL. I'm going to prepare you. College is about getting ready for your job. The problem is, oh yeah, what are you paying me?
Those two things, that's a good point, and it's a good way to summarize it, because I think the two things in conflict here are, and I use this term and I don't want people to snicker, but the football romantic in Bill Belichick, the guy that thinks that he can go out into a practice field and day after day, week after week, month after month, teach somebody how to tackle better, how to be in the right spot, how to see the game and let it, you know, slow down for them in a way that he understands it in ways other people don't. So there's the coach and the teacher that you allude to, and he's talked about that in the past, and you can hear that in his voice. This is a guy he's brilliant, but there's also the part of professionalizing the program the way he vowed to do, or the way that he talked about he would do if he were to return to college coaching. And when you professionalize a college program in the way that North Carolina will now be professionalized, can you still maintain that football romanticism? Can you still be the teacher / football scholar? Or are you just going to be the guy that is able to make the pitch so you get the $5 million quarterback to pick you over Clemson and Florida State? That's going to be the challenge. And I think that's a fascinating thing about this entire move back to college, is that why would he take this on at this stage of his life when he could make twice the money by saying yes to, say, the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating idea. It's an interesting point. I just don't know what version of Bill we're getting. I don't know if we're getting the greatest coach ever, or we're getting a guy who kind of damaged his reputation at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't know. Well, you know how I feel about Belichick.
I do, but you know what North Carolina only cares about? The fact that he has now immediately enhanced their program, improved their brand, and made them more credible than they ever have been in football. This is a team this is a program. I think they have not won the ACC since 1980.
Well, I mean, you know, Bill didn't go there to win the ACC. That's probably one of the lower goals.
Okay.
But
that's where he is at the program.
Yeah.
Did you see one of the interesting sidelights to this? I know Dustin will appreciate this. That Schefter reported that had these talks with Bill Belichick broken down.
Yep.
Do you know who was in line to get the job?
Who was next?
Tommy Rees.
Is that right? Wow.
Tommy Rees had interviewed for the job, was considered the favorite. And
holy cow.
He was ready to take the job after two interviews. He had Nick Saban's stamp of approval, and Tommy Rees was in line to be the North Carolina head coach, if not for Bill Belichick.
I don't know if it was the next guy.
Well, let me read you the tweet. You challenging Schefter? You go after Schefter then. Had talks between Bill Belichick and North Carolina broken down. Browns passing game specialist and tight ends coach Tommy Rees was considered the favorite to land the Tar Heels head coaching job. Per league sources, Rees interviewed for the NC job twice and had Nick Saban as an advocate.
I heard the Army coach was in the running for that.
He won't even acknowledge that tweet.
Okay.
Because it doesn't go with his little plan.
What's my little plan?
You want to ruin a guy?
I'm just telling you what I read and talking to people. Who Tommy Rees was in line for that job.
Who do you trust more?
I didn't say
Schefter.
I didn't say he wasn't in line for the job. You said he was the favorite.
No, he was the favorite. Okay. I would say that he's the favorite. I do know a couple people involved in this process. I would not be surprised if that is an accurate report.
What do you think, Dustin? Vrabel to the Bears, Tommy Rees as the OC.
Well,
and then Vrabel, as I mentioned yesterday, who is right now at the top of my list, would no longer be you're no longer a consideration.
Oh wow, you would eliminate him from consideration if that were his, plan.
If Tommy Rees was his OC, yes.
That's naive,
Dustin. You're judging a guy on his college career that was excellent, but you didn't care for. It's so.
His college career was not excellent.
He was a starting quarterback in Notre
Dame. His offensive play calling in Notre Dame was no good either.
I should not have diverted this. I'm sorry.
You've poked the bear.
I thought
now.
That was an interesting sidelight.
Yeah,
because
an interesting
there's
idea.
So many fascinating details. How about our guy Mike Lombardi joining Bill Belichick?
That is unbelievable.
In Chapel
Mike,
Hill.
Mike, of course, worked for Bill, and apparently Mike was instrumental in getting Bill to Chapel Hill.
He's gonna miss stirring it up, because this is a guy that has become a media.
Oh, I know.
Media.
He's an entity.
Pot stirrer and an entity, and now he's going back to the grind.
I tell you what.
As a general manager.
If I'm Tommy Rees, I would just think to myself, okay, I didn't get that job. They gave it to the greatest coach of all time. I'm in some pretty good company.
I think I could accept that one.
Yeah.
I think that would be one that would be easier to accept. And I might think, oh, you know what? The Bears offensive coordinator role looks pretty good.
You know, the problem, and I know Bill doesn't believe this, but the problem is...
Can you go back to Vegas?
Oh, no.
That's 552.
Texter saying David didn't slap the bear. He slapped the bear on the arse. He didn't poke the bear.
I have just worn out my welcome 22 minutes back.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
It's a record. I think that's a new record.
Okay.
But you went right for his...
I did. I'm just reporting the facts.
Yeah. Just the facts.
Just the facts.
Pretty wild. We'll get into all of it. We've got all sorts of things to talk about and discuss. There were plenty of things going on, and we'll get to all of it next in the Pick Six. We'll start tearing apart the stories of the day. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Vegas Haw! Vegas Haw!
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinkin' Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How do you rate White Sox trade of Garrett Crochet to the Red Sox? Is there any way it was worse than the last time the Sox traded a power lefty to the Bo Sox? Who won the trade? What grade would you give Chris Getz for the deal?
Yeah, I would give him an incomplete. I got to see this one unfold. I told you, it's probably a really good trade, and it's probably a fair trade, but I'm not there yet. I am still going to be kind of, I'll be watching. I'm not gonna give him a, you know, some kind of, I'm mumbling. Well, you can't expect me to just give him a seal of approval. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I have a hard time. It looks like a pretty good trade. Yeah, let's go throw a parade. We got rid of another good player.
Well, I mean, just even starting this out referencing the last time the White Sox traded a power lefty to the Red Sox. Okay. So the top two guys in that trade, where are they now? Right. One is with the Dodgers. He was an opener in a World Series game. Right. And the other guy is about to get a $5 million buyout or already got a buyout and is going to be a free agent. Super.
Someone will pick him up.
Disappointments, but they're moving on. They've moved on.
Probably a defensive a replacement.
That was 8
somewhere.
Years ago, too, though.
Right. I'm just saying. But I mean, I'm just saying. It's just to start this off with that part of the... I mean, that's... In the first 5 minutes, I thought about this.
Of course.
Right? It had
you
to
got
go,
a power lefty going to the Red Sox again, from the White Sox.
Right, again.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, here's the thing. At the end of the day, and this is why I'm super excited about Jim Callis at 725, is that the White Sox now have six of the top 60 prospects in all of baseball. We've talked at length about how many of the top prospects the Cubs have, right? And again, they're only scratch-off tickets until they actually perform. But two of these guys might be at 35th and Shields this year,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think Garrett Crochet was never going to get another contract from the White Sox. I personally would have waited a little bit more. I would have liked to have gotten somebody that could really help you out immediately more, mm-hmm. but they got a long way to go until they're good.
They do have a long way to go, but this is a good start. This is getting something in return for your most valuable asset. The number one pitcher on the trading block in Major League Baseball. Consummating a deal that you knew you had to make. I don't think it's worthy of celebration, but certainly evaluation. Because what are you celebrating, Sox fans? The fact that you have bottomed out to the point where you have to unload somebody that you could justify signing and building around? Yes, that's the reality you're facing. It's an uphill climb. But this is the way to do it. This is the way rebuilds are done. This is the process. So you have to embrace it, I suppose.
Trust the process.
So in 2 years, I guess now we can expect to see Garrett Crochet triumphantly celebrating on a mound as the Red Sox celebrate another World Series title, because that was the clock in 2016. In December, Chris Sale goes to the Red Sox. 2018, he wins them a World Series. They win the trade forever. The Red Sox will win the trade forever if they win a World Series because of Garrett Crochet. That's not a ridiculous sentence.
No.
Not because of history, not because of what they did with Sale. But you are the Sox, the White Sox, and you had to do this deal. Four guys in return for one pitcher who could be injury-prone, let's face it. But we said the same thing about Chris Sale. That trade signaled the beginning of a reset and rebuild in 2016 the Sox had never done. This one is the latest. How many have there been since? Too many. Let's hope this begins a process where the Sox begin to develop some of this talent they're accumulating.
Sure, there are a lot of questions about the future. Nobody's thought about the future.
Well, the future is now for Bill Belichick. How shocked are you that Bill Belichick took the North Carolina job? Will it work? Why or why not? What will be the biggest adjustment and impact?
Well, I think this is a fascinating story. It really is one of the bigger stories of the year in football because of what it represents. And nobody saw it coming. Challenge anybody to tell me they would have predicted Bill Belichick returns to North Carolina. And there are all kinds of jokes you can make and ways that you can snicker. And yes, he has a keen eye for young talent, and all those things are true. But I would be very wary of underestimating Bill Belichick. This is a crazy transformation for his coaching approach, going from NFL lifer to now a college campus and all that comes with all of the headaches with the NIL on the transfer portal. Guys are running away from college football to other jobs that are less stressful and less complicated. Bill Belichick's diving in with both feet. I applaud him for trying this at his age. This is not Tony La Russa going back to the White Sox.
Boy.
This is not somebody who is past his prime necessarily. I would be shocked if that were the reality. I think this is somebody that's going to be impactful immediately. He's going to get talent coming to him because of who he is. He's going to put a staff together that allows him to be CEO slash head coach. And you're going to see North Carolina experience a bump, a bounce, however you want to describe it. But the Tar Heels, I think, are back because of Chapel Bill.
I love that. Did you already see that T-shirt? Did you already see it? If not, you should, like, I mean, David, really, you need to, like, start printing those. Mully has the color scheme all set for you. He had that done the other day, and he'll take one in a large. I'll take one in a large as well. This is great for college football. I don't see any downside to this in college football. I am shocked. A lot of people, including myself, I wonder how you guys would respond to this. You know, I think Bill Belichick, kind of an egomaniac, and took a shot when Tom Brady, obviously, they broke up. And Tom won another Super Bowl, and Bill's looking for work, and a bunch of jobs were handed out. He didn't get one. And he's on the verge of being the all-time winningest coach in the NFL. And I thought that's what would motivate him to not take this job and maybe use this job to help him. Oh, shoot, Bill's thinking about this. We better act now, Bears, right? Like, you know, we've got an opening. You know, we could go do this, Jets, right? Like, there's teams that have openings.
He was never going back to the Jets.
You know, I'm just, there's only three teams have openings today, this very second, right? My point is, I was surprised by this. I think it's great. I want to watch. I can't wait for the first North Carolina football game. But a part of the only thing that you didn't mention, and you, I thought you nailed it, David, was the role of his son.
Right.
Part of the deal is that Steven is going to be the coach in waiting. Mm-hmm. He will probably be the defensive coordinator. And this is going to be more about Bill GMing this team with the help of his buddy, our former regular, Michael Lombardi, right? And that's going to be a big part of this, too. And this is not these kids, you know, he wants to build a program where kids are coming to prepare themselves for the next level, which going backwards, I always thought a major. I mean, you had a major in it, and there were some classes that would be based around this, but you could major in becoming a professional athlete. How many kids go to college majoring to be a doctor and don't end up being a doctor? They fail, and they end up being something else. So why couldn't you go to college and major in being a professional athlete? And that's what the major is now, being a professional athlete. I couldn't think of a better guy. If I was a high school kid and Bill Belichick asked me to go, you could keep the money. Sign me up.
All right. So I think that, yes, it's shocking. Yes, people are leaving college football and Bill's coming in. The most interesting question here is, will it work? What exactly defines success for Bill Belichick, college football coach? Nothing less than a national championship. That's just the reality of who he is as a coach, of what he's done in his coaching career. And I'm going back to when he was the defensive coordinator that won Super Bowls for Bill Parcells. You know, the old line that Parcells never won a Super Bowl without Belichick, but Belichick won six without Parcells. I think success can only be judged with a coach of this excellence as a championship,
wow.
And not an ACC title.
Wow.
And I don't know that that's possible.
I don't know that that's fair.
I don't think it is fair, but I'm just telling you how you have to look at
it. I love how you put
it
out there. We need to talk about this later, but because that's
what,
fascinating.
Will it work? What means it work? Does it? Oh, Bill got that one guy a scholarship and got him to the NFL. That's not what this is. And let me ask you this question. We said it this morning. Bill Belichick is probably the greatest football coach who ever lived.
Yeah.
Is he the best coach currently in college football? It's a different game. It's a different sport. Can he play the transfer game? Can he play the NIL? I don't know the answer to these questions.
He becomes that the minute he signed his contract.
I'm just asking, if that's the case, then why shouldn't he be considered a guy who needs to win a title, a championship, to be considered a great coach?
Because the ink still
hasn't
is not dry yet, because you need time that he might not have.
Well, he'll be 73 years old.
So
when this,
I want to get back to this, because I don't know that success, I don't know that he has to win a national championship for this to be a success.
If we get back, you're going to have to tell me what is success
for
Bill
Belichick.
I love this assignment.
Okay. All right.
It's such a multi-layered question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs' time is 9 a.m. We talked about the Lions coordinator, especially OC Ben Johnson, as a guy having a job interview when he last faced the Bears, with Matt Eberflus since fired and the Bears actually having an opening. Does the same hold true against the Vikings? Do you consider the Vikings DC, Brian Flores, a potential guy the Bears have to consider? Will you watch him on Monday night with that in mind?
Love this question. Love the Belichick theorem as well. I think that you are now, you got a guy that is a potential candidate for your head coaching job, your interim head coach, Thomas Brown. Now he gets to put together a second offense that will go against the defensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings, one of the best in the division. How can that guy not be considered a candidate? I know what the problems are, and I know the Bears are unlikely, the McCaskey family would be unlikely to hire him, because he has lawsuits going against the NFL, and that might be a stumbling block for them because they wouldn't want to go against their partners. I think we get that. But I think we also understand the need to improve what's going on defensively, the need for them to have a showing against this guy. He does unique things. If he ends up coming after your quarterback from all different places, could you not be impressed by what he's capable of doing, or are you more fearful of what he's capable of doing? He gets another bite at the apple. He gets to see this offense. This offense has now been on tape for four games. So we'll see what a really good defensive guy can do when he has a suspicion and a knowledge of what they did the last time and how they will have to try to change it. I think it's a great idea that this is a job interview for Brian Flores. And I say that because if you want someone who's a great leader, guy's a hell of a football coach. He will bring you discipline. He would do some things that would help your program. But can he work with a quarterback? Can he work with a young quarterback? I think there's as many questions as there are answers. And I think I'm going to be looking at this and wondering, is Brian Flores trying to get the Bears job?
I think it's a great question as well. And it is something that I would keep my eye on. And it's also the number one question, like with Mike Vrabel, who's your OC? So I don't think, unless you make him, you guys will know the rule better than I will, unless you make them like an associate head coach, could Brian Flores potentially take Wes Phillips, who is the OC with the Vikings now, could he bring him with to the Bears if he elevated him to that title, offensive coordinator / associate head coach? Or, you know, do we have to start looking at the passing game coordinator for the Vikings or the quarterbacks coach for the Vikings to be a potential all OC for Brian Flores? So that's something else that I think would be really interesting. You know, who would he take from the Vikings potentially, right? And he's been around. Brian Flores has been around, so doesn't necessarily have to come from the Vikings. But there are a lot of people that really, really like what Kevin O'Connell is doing. So you'd think, well, let's have a connection to Kevin O'Connell to come over to the Bears with Flores. Yes, I think it's something to definitely keep an eye on Monday night.
Wes Phillips, by the way, is obviously the son of, right? You know that. I think that's pretty awesome.
Brian Flores should be a legitimate candidate to become the head coach of the Chicago Bears. He should be one of four that I would prioritize with Mike Vrabel, Ben Johnson, and Joe Brady. And Brian Flores would be on that list because of his previous experience, because of what he's done in Minnesota, and because of how he won in Miami. If he is the guy that you have identified that is strong enough to be a leader of your franchise, then you will talk through and get past these lawsuits that linger. You will not be afraid to take on Brian Flores and all that comes with that, because these are lawsuits that can go away. And you can justify hiring somebody that's the right person at the right time for your organization, regardless of what that means to the Maras or Rooneys or whoever you fear offending. You're the McCaskies. Do what's right for the Chicago Bears if that's in fact what it takes. Don't let a lawsuit stand in your way if Brian Flores is identified as the guy who's going to make the biggest impact. Don't also listen to Tua Tagovailoa necessarily, because that's a long time ago and there are two sides to every story. Don't let fear get in your way of making the right decision if he is the right choice. And you know what? He just could be. He is the defensive coordinator of a team that is one of the bigger surprises in the NFC, and he's a big reason why. If you are convicted that he is the right guy, don't let anything stand in your way.
Also, really quick, quarterbacks coach for the Vikings, Josh McCown.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Josh McCown.
I want to give him a hug.
How about that?
He made Dustin. Do you remember our long interview with him?
Yeah.
He made
yeah.
us better people.
Did. So, and he might make Caleb Williams a better quarterback. So
right.
keep that keep that in mind. Put that in your back pocket. Nice catch all around. That was good, guys. Are the Bulls at 10-15 about where you expected after 25 games, or better or worse than you thought? Has our 825 guest, Billy Donovan's new style of play, been a good or a bad idea?
I think the Bulls are pretty much where we thought they would be, just on the verge, teetering in mediocrity. They haven't picked a lane yet. I don't think they're good enough to say that they are a definite playoff team. They're not playing that well, that consistently. But I don't think they're terrible either. They're not bottoming out to the extent that people would like to see them bottom out at times. That draft pick is tenuous. It's way too close for love, some people's comfort. And like, oh, boy, the Bulls are too good. They need to lose. They need to start trading people. I don't know that I want that either, because I don't want them to be unwatchable. Here's what I like. They are consistent with carrying through with the message that was sent at the beginning of training camp and all offseason. They're different. They're different than they were last year when they were 26th in the league in three-point shooting, and now they're second behind the Celtics. They take a lot of threes. They play at a pace that is frenetic. They are being true to everything that Billy Donovan told us that they would be. That's coaching. I can't wait to talk to Billy Donovan. I want to know how he's going to balance Modest Puzelis minutes with Patrick Williams minutes now that they're both back.
Oh, yeah.
I want to know a lot of things. But the Bulls, I can't deny it. They are fun to watch. I am entertained when I watch a Bulls game. And I don't know if in December, this mid-December, we expected to be this entertained. So they're right about where we thought they would be.
I agree that they're right about where we thought they would be. I am impressed with the Vooch, the way he is playing. Vooch has had a much better year to start than I thought he was capable of. You know, they just live and die by the three, right? And Billy doesn't like the idea of Billy Ball. He doesn't like that turn of phrase, Billy Ball. But my question is, why weren't they doing this 4 or 5 years ago? Why did it take so long to get to this point, and who talked who into doing this? It feels like somebody talked somebody into changing the way they play basketball over on the West Side. I could listen to Billy Donovan talk basketball all day, so I'm all for it, and we'll see.
Yeah, I want to know how Billy Donovan feels about the new style of play, about the expression new style of play. Is this a new style of play for him? Has he sped things up? Is he looking at the game differently than he has before? Is that what he has experienced during his coaching career? And has he seen difficulty in kind of doing that sort of thing? I'm really curious if he feels like it's different or just faster, the style of play. I'm really interested in talking to him. And like you, I love hearing what he has to say. I agree with you, David. I think the Bulls are kind of where I thought they'd be. I don't think they've fully committed to not being any good. And I think they are unbelievably watchable. I really enjoy watching the Bulls. And when they actually do win games, there's nothing better, man. It's like they really play well when they win. It's just a fun thing to be able to see. And you know, on nights when they're not going to win, you kind of know what's going awry with them. It's not that hard to figure out. I want to ask him also about Josh Giddey. And just, you know, did he learn his style of play at almost the international level? Is he more of a taught player as opposed to like a playground guy or a guy that was a gym rat type? I'm very curious on his take of that kind of a player and what he brings and obviously what he doesn't bring to
and
the
can
floor.
You teach him to play defense?
Well, that's the great
please.
That's the great problem.
As a leader, I think you shy away from those questions.
What is your take on the official posting of Japanese pitcher Roki Sasaki, who Cubs boss Jed Hoyer immediately began recruiting?
Yeah, I think we're an appealing destination for any Japanese player.
Seiya and Shota have had really good experiences. I think we're appealing destination for any Japanese pitcher, Jed Hoyer went on to say. Both the Dodgers and Phillies and roughly 10 other teams have made him a priority. And get this. Hold on. This is the thing of the whole question. How about the White Sox saying they'll also be making a pitch for the pitcher?
Why the tone?
Yeah, he's making fun of the White Sox. He thinks it's...
Did anybody think they would be in on this?
I'm just asking about
you
the
tone.
Oh, I knew it.
Oh, yeah.
I think that here it is. You know, this is like when Ohtani first came over. You're only allowed to give your the White Sox can offer this guy the exact contract the Cubs can offer him. They have as much money as the Cubs have. I think the most any team has is like 7.5, and both the Cubs and the Sox have just over 6. So I don't think it comes down to money. It's the organization. It's where you go. I just don't know how you sell, come to the worst team in baseball history, and you can really earn your reputation. I don't know how you sell him on a PowerPoint presentation. It feels like one of those seat at the table things that are going on in Sox history, right? We got a seat at the table. Well, he's going to consider us. You know, I don't think there's any way they could coax him to come here.
Who's his brother-in-law?
But, oh boy, they got to sign him quick. But I do believe that it is the sort of thing that the Cubs could get done because they've been in on him. They've looked at him. I think they got a couple of players here from Japan. The only other team with as many is the Dodgers. So I think that there's a lot to like. And, you know, hey, we're going to play in Tokyo to open the season. I just think it's kind of a fun thing, and it would not surprise me if the Cubs are able to close this deal.
Yeah, I'm hoping the Cubs can close this deal. They had a lot of success last year with a similar type move. And I'm not trying to be crappy about it. I was surprised. I mean, Chris Getz went on record saying that they're putting a presentation together and they're in on this. Good for that. If you're a Sox, that should make you happy, Sox fans. That should make you happy. Now, tap as David, if you're watching, is tapping on heads. Maybe it's just ceremonial.
Why don't you sack Caleb Williams and then tap him in the head?
It's a good experience. I think the Cubs have a more realistic shot at landing him because of their success with Japanese players. They can point to Shota. They can point to Seiya Suzuki. That is, I think, important
Sox
to Japanese.
Had success with Japanese players.
Been a while.
Tadahito Iguchi.
It's been a while.
What about the closer, Shingo?
Come on. That's 2005.
I miss his smile.
That's been a long time. I miss his smile, too. He was a great guy to cover.
Lovely man.
All right, but I think that with Suzuki, this is a 23-year-old that's going to go where the most money is. I hope the deal with the Dodgers isn't real, the handshake agreement, wink, wink, nod, nod. Cubs have a real shot. I think that if the Cubs, I would even be willing to say, if it would mean they have to keep Suzuki to get Sasaki, that would be worth doing because Sasaki is that good potentially, and he's 23.
Yeah, he's young.
Pick six.
Pick six rolls on. What is your ideal Cubs outfield and DH configuration in light of the news coming out of the winter meetings? Who's more likely to get traded, Cody Bellinger or Seiya Suzuki?
Well, I don't know about more likely, but this is what I want. The question is, what is my ideal configuration? Give me Ian Happ. Give me PCA. Give me Kyle Tucker. Give me Cody Bellinger at first base. Let Michael Bush be your DH platoon. I don't care. He could be your DH full-time if you want. Seiya Suzuki, get him to waive the no-trade clause. I know what I just said about Sasaki is true. Seiya Suzuki, it's time for a change of scenery. I understand why he has value. You look at his numbers, you can convince yourself that offensively he is solid. I want spectacular from Seiya. We're not getting that in the field. He's not a right fielder you trust, not in September, not in big moments. He's had too many fails, big fails. So, see ya, Seiya. I'm ready for a new time, and Kyle Tucker, come on down.
Kyle Tucker, come on down. I love that idea. I just very concerned about the asking price for a guy that you can only control for one more year. I think the Seiya Suzuki Cubs relationship is broken. And this goes back to the question that we just talked about. And this worries me about that because Seiya now very unhappy about being a DH. Doesn't want to be. It will catch the damn ball and then you don't have to be a DH, right? Know how many outs there are and then you don't have to be the DH. Stay healthy. And then you don't have to be the DH. So I'd like Cody Bellinger to stick around and be the right fielder slash DH slash give a first baseman a day off. Obviously, PCA playing center. Obviously, Ian Happ playing left. Seiya, see ya.
Yeah. Seiya Suzuki has one role on this team, and that's DH. he's not an outfielder anymore. And if you can get, if you can turn Paredes into Tucker, I think anybody out there would make that move. Yes. I don't know anyone that wouldn't. I don't know about Bellinger. That seems like a money thing. That seems more about they thought he was going to opt out and he opted in and they want to make more moves. And
now they have to afford him?
If now they're trying to figure out how to afford him, and I'm not sure they can. I think they'd rather spend that money on a pitcher, frankly. I think that he may not be back too. So that they could both be gone. But Seiya doesn't want to be a DH. What else can he do? What other role is there for him? No one wants... None of you have mentioned him as your right fielder, and no one wants to roll him out there. So I don't think that's the answer. I think they're moving hard on Bellinger. I think they're really trying to do something because, in part, they're stuck with Seiya. It would be a way if you traded Seiya. I don't think you'd get anything for him. I think that's part of the problem. Like, you can get something. You know, Cody Bellinger is value. Even with his contract, Seiya, you basically, if you traded him, it would be more or less a contract dump, and you would have a team. The other team would be kind of like, well, we're going to have to give him another year, so we'll take him, but we're not giving you much.
Astros,
but you're not getting much.
Well, with Paredes,
you're okay with that.
Astros take him and Paredes for Kyle Tucker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Sorry, Paredes and who?
And Seiya Suzuki for Kyle Tucker?
Yeah, I think they're going to want.
They're going to want a prospect.
They're going to want one more prospect.
No, stay away from Matt Shaw.
Oh, okay, Matt Shaw or Owen Casey?
Is Matt Shaw in your lineup?
I think because if you're getting Kyle Tucker, you can trade to Owen Casey.
Is he your second baseman? Because
Matt Shaw would be your third baseman.
Okay.
If you get rid of Paredes.
Because you're getting rid of Paredes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. We've got the extra point next. It is, then maybe you could move your first baseman to second base.
It could be.
All right. We got the extra point, and we'll get to that next. Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
What do you make of where the White Sox are now after bringing in four of the Red Sox top 15 prospects for Garrett Crochet, adding Mike Tauchman, one-year deal for just under $2 million, using the top pick in the Rule 5 draft on the Brewers pitcher Shane Smith at the winter meetings? This was Chris Getz. You look at the long-term health of the organization, inject the type of talent we did in this trade, and is really exciting to us. You talk about the acceleration of a rebuild. That was a deal that we felt like we can do that. That Chris Getz from the winter meetings, your reaction.
He's going to be upbeat. You've got to be upbeat. This is a big foundational type of trade. It's the first one. You've got to make another one. You've got to make probably another couple to be in a position where you feel really good about the health of your organization, the strength of your minor league system. That is where you start the climb back. And this is a positive step in the right direction. It's not worthy of celebration, as I said earlier, because you don't want to celebrate bottoming out necessarily. But this, in terms of an evaluation, this was the right move at the right time. I think that I wonder about their collection of catchers. I wonder about getting a guy in Kyle Teal, who now joins Carroll, who now joins Lee, and you've got three guys, and I know that gives you depth, but is that the right use of your resources? We'll find out. Is Kyle Teal more like Kyle Schwarber? They said that he was athletic and could play different positions. Is he really an outfielder, potentially, in left field? I don't know. The Sox have a history of doing that, putting guys out of position. I wonder what's next for Kyle Teal. Will he be here opening day? Will he be here in 2025? Same with the others. The most intriguing prospect to me in this trade is Braden Montgomery, who has yet to play professional baseball because of an injury, but was a first-round draft pick, could have been one of the top three picks in last year's amateur draft. That could be the number one overall pick or the top three pick the Sox are deprived of making next June because of the rules and everything.
They got the 10th pick.
This is a step in the right direction. Chris Getz should be happy to celebrate this in a way that others will, but I think evaluating it, it does look solid at least.
Yeah, I guess it looks solid. Again, I can't wait. 7:25, we're going to get a lot more information. We talked to Jim Callis, specifically David, you know, the Kyle Teal idea, right? Is he an everyday catcher? Is there somewhere else for him? You know, I think if you're a Sox fan, you want one of these guys has to be in the lineup, I think, this year every day. Also, like their starting rotation next year, oof, is it bleak, right? The starting rotation for the Sox, you know, when you get rid of
Crochet. You got a lot of young starters.
A lot of young guys. We'll see how they pan out.
I don't know about bleak.
Not
I think
bleak?
Promising.
Right
word. Yeah.
Right, well, I guess another question for Jim Callis at 725.
The catcher thing is really interesting to me because, the Chris Getz goes out and says, Montgomery, Colson Montgomery, is got a chance to be the starting shortstop, mm-hmm. and Edgar Cuero is going to be competing for a roster spot. And then the next day, Cuero is the ninth-rated catcher, according to MLB.com, and they go out and they trade for the fourth-rated catcher from MLB.com, or is he the third-rated catcher? By all accounts, Teal is a quicker, better athlete. He can do things that he can even do things on the base paths that you can't get from Cuero. So Teal is the better of the two as a catcher, as a defensive catcher. And he's got a plus arm and he's got a different body shape. I think he's 6 feet tall. The other guy is kind of a shorter guy, stockier guy. He weighs 20 pounds more than the other catcher. He's got that kind of body that you think of as a catcher. So,
girth.
So that gives Cuero some power to that body. I'll be very curious to talk to Jim Callis about that. Here's the thing that I can't get away from, and I know I always sound like I'm complaining about the White Sox, but they went out, they got the new manager, and they brought some people in, and they've upgraded, and they're modernized. Now they're going to challenge. They brought back 7 members of the staff from last year that helped them, as I said, is it helped them win 61 or lose 121?
That did surprise me.
How you look at it.
I don't know how you celebrate being going outside the organization when you bring back as many coaches that were part of that as you did.
And that is kind of confusing to me a little bit, to be honest with you.
Especially Ethan Katz.
Well, did they have a lot of contract stuff to deal with? I don't know the answer to that, mm-hmm. but I was surprised that happened. And by the way, you also have the general manager confirming that it's a complete rebuild when, I believe when he was hired, it was because you wouldn't have to have a rebuild. You'd be able to win faster. So
those are good questions for the general manager.
We knew all that stuff. Yeah. We knew all that stuff was something to consider, but I think it's just stuff you want to take a look at. And we'll do that. We'll do that whenever we get the opportunity, maybe even tomorrow, I hope. Anyway, that is the pick six and the extra point, and we're going to get to your calls. What do you think of the White Sox movements? 312-644-6767. Maybe you want to talk about Bill. Maybe you want to talk about Brian Flores. We're here for you. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
You look at, the long-term health of the organization, and to inject the type of talent that we just did in this trade is really exciting for us. We talk about accelerating a rebuild. This was a deal that we feel like can do that.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Yes, indeed. That is Chris Getz. He's the man of the hour.
Get talent in your system. Develop a style of play, bring those guys up, have a clean major league operation, do the things the right way, and that's the way the White Sox have to operate. That's the way they have to approach this. Now they're getting talent back in the system, and they use their prized asset, their number one asset, to get it.
Give me a time frame. When are they competitive again?
Competitive, probably two seasons, best case scenario. Contending,
so the third
three seasons.
Year? The third year.
Yeah. I think that's realistic.
Yeah.
You're a 141 loss team or 121 loss team.
It felt like 140.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I get it mixed up.
You brought up Tony La Russa out of nowhere. you have nothing to apologize for.
Huh? It wasn't out of nowhere.
Oh, my
Let's
God.
Go to the phone lines.
That was Kevin in Palatine.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. So Cubs and Sox with this whole thing with all these prospects. So your guest coming on at 7:20.
Yeah.
I remember the day he came on and he told us, Yoan Moncada was a can't-miss multi-all-star. And Eloy was going to hit 400 home runs. And then Peter Gammons came on and told us Kopech was going to win multiple Cy Youngs. We hear the same thing on the other side of town. Corey Patterson and Matt Shaw and all this stuff. So I just want to give the whole station credit, because from Bernstein on, everyone yesterday, this was all met with a, yeah, whatever, yesterday. And I like that you guys are doing that too this morning. Even though, David, I do want to hear you talk about the Sox rotation, because Dustin was 100% right that rotation is a dumpster fire for next year.
I'll talk about it. I will. Give me time.
Okay, yeah, but yeah, I can't wait to hear about the great Jonathan Cannon. But when it comes to the Cubs, Kyle Tucker, I don't want to hear more Jed prospect hugging. Give them what they want. Kyle Tucker is a star. It's the one thing this team is missing. Go ahead and trade. And then they're like, well, he doesn't want to sign. Well, guess what? Then open your checkbook after you get him and pay him. But that's what this team is missing. They're missing a star. He's a star. But Jim Callis is going to come on, and James Fox and all the rest of these guys, and tell you about these prospects. Matt Spiegel had a terrifying stat yesterday afternoon. Garrett Crochet is one of three players from his draft to make an all-star team. Think about that. The entire draft. So now you think four of these guys are going to make it? If one of them makes it in Major League Baseball.
In fairness, he's 25, and that's a pretty recent draft.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate the phone call.
Yeah, that's still to be determined.
Yeah.
You know, there are plenty of players that develop as they go on this part of development. All right, we've got we'll get back to this conversation. We got to take a quick time out. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.